Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Do you take your cell phone for granted? What impact does taxes have on development in the IT area? When search engines capture your information, does it bother you? Well, we're going to talk about a host of consumer issues. My guest is Steve Posiosk, who is the president of the American Consumer Institute. Steve, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Well, thank you very much, Shirley. Good to be here.
Now, there's lots of things going on, and you seem to be on top of an awful lot of subjects. Let's start out first by talking about telecommunications and phones. And we do take our phones for granted. I mean, we know that. It's just so obvious because, I mean, and then you see people walking down the street and they've always got their phone stuck in their ear. Now they're not supposed to do it when they're driving, but they do. But anyway, taxes, one of the things that you pointed out that I thought was so interesting before we went on the air, that we charge taxes on IT three times greater than general sales tax. Why is that?
You know, it's interesting. I think it's a stand back from the past where we had monopoly services, and it was easy just to tax the franchise. And what we have now is much more sort of intermodal competition. We have, you know, the cell market. We still have the wireline. We have broadband services and satellite. We have cable TV. And a lot of these markets are competing now with one another. And so these taxes have remained. They're various gross receipts taxes. There are sales taxes, a lot of end user taxes, 911 taxes, things that we can understand, and some things that we don't understand. There's higher property taxes on many of these facilities as well. And when you start adding them up, you realize that some of these services, which have huge benefits that I can talk about to you, some of these services that have these huge benefits and that we should encourage because of all the applications and things and the information that it provides us, unfortunately, these are the very things that we're taxing, which has the opposite.
For example, give me some examples.
Okay, well, for example, in the U.S., sales tax averages around 6.4%. Cable TV taxes run almost 12%. The wireline services runs at 17.3%, 17.2%, excuse me. Wireless phones, this is a service that's only been around for a quarter of a century, is at 16%. And some of the highest areas are right here in the metropolitan area.
Well, now, why? What is the justification? Are these taxes? Are they? Is this part of the regulation from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, or how are the taxes imposed? Is this by Congress, or how do we set the levels of taxes on these areas?
Well, on the wireless side, what we're really dealing with mostly are state and local taxes.
Okay, so we got to blame our states. Okay,
well, yeah, and interesting, in some cases. The taxes appear to be for really legitimate reasons, like E91 services and fire protection. But then there are examples where, under that name of collection, it's being used for general purposes as a general fund. So really what it's become in many cases is just a nice growing market in which policymakers and others can extract resources, revenues from. And that's really what it's become. In some of the areas, again, there's several states that are just among the largest and well over 20%. And then there's some areas just right within the metropolitan area that stand out as well.
And they would be?
Well, if we just look briefly around the U.S., the biggest states are in Nebraska. That's 24% taxes. Now, these are not taxes on the business. These are taxes on the end user when you pay your bill.
The consumer ends up paying. I understand, right?
Right. Washington State, New York, 23%. Florida, 22%. Illinois, also 22%. Now, Maryland is around 17%. D.C. is also just below 17%. And Virginia's nearly 12%.
And then, so we protest these taxes to our legislators in our local and state legislatures. Okay. What is the reason for this? Is it because it's an area that our people who are setting the tax limits know that we want this service, that we use it, that we're going to continue subscribing to it regardless of the taxes?
Yeah, I think it's become in some ways like a gravy train. It's just really it's lucrative, and the sad part about it is, like on the wireless side, the consumers that really benefit from these, it's become in some cases the only source of communications for low income and families. And as well as young, is the cell phone.
Yeah, many people give up their landlines.
Well, but what happens, and then how do you save? Well, one way is they have these family plans and so on.
Right.
So if we look at, for example, we look at a family plan that's like $39.99. The benefit of adding the extra phone is only like $9.99, right? So it's like, well, gee, I can get a phone for my spouse, get one for my kids. He's a latchkey kid. We're both working. We want to keep in touch with these. And then all of a sudden, you start looking at it. When I look at Baltimore City, they will charge you $4 for every phone. So that family has to add another $12 onto their bill just for that, not to mention state sales tax of 6%, plus 911 fees and other things.
It's not as free or as inexpensive as you think.
Well, right. So we're trying to get a family plan. You're trying to save a little bit of money. So you're trying to bundle and get a few extra services and get those extra lines on. And City of Baltimore charge you $4 a pop for a line, and that ends up to being 28% on your bill when you pay it, not to mention the property taxes and other taxes that these providers pay that's higher than other businesses as well.
Well, you know, Steve, the point that you're making here to me that is so crucial is that we as consumers go in and we look at the price that's being charged to us by the company that's selling us the product or the service.
Right.
What we don't consider, I suspect, is the added-on taxes.
Right.
Like if you've got a 20% tax added onto a $100 bill, that's a significant amount for a monthly payment.
And consumers, really, they detest these hidden little fees. And they look at the bill and they say, well, wow, I thought I was signing up for this $39 thing. And here my bill is $60, $70. What's going on here?
Right.
Montgomery County, it's 25% tax on the end user. And D.C. is 14%. Now, interesting, if you just go from Baltimore City, which I said was 28, and go to Baltimore County, it's 7.7%.
You know, what you're telling me is when we go in, we really need to go in and shop for services and make sure that we ask about what the tax ramifications are going
right.
to be. What's my final bill going to be? But that's not something that I would think that the sellers are going to be up front. Well, not to say they're not up front, but they're certainly not going to offer it to you unless you ask for it.
That's right. I mean, we're trying to sell something, so we're going to give you what the retail
we'll
price
give
of it is.
We'll give you our price, which is legit.
And the other
Absolutely.
Things I can't control the various fees and universal service fund fees and other things that get tacked on. But consumers pay at the end. And the irony, of course, to all this is you know, here we're looking at high unemployment right now with 9.1%, a stagnated economy. We have high deficits and mixed investment. We want to encourage that into our economy. And the irony of all this is that the information technology sector, the broadband sector, the wireless sector, this is really fueling a lot of the growth that we currently have.
Mm-hmm.
The health of our economy,
health
of our economy is inextricably linked to the information technology sector.
And the whole growth of it. You're right. We got to take a brief pause here just to let people know they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Steve Posiosk, who is the president of the American Consumer Institute. And we've been talking about the ramification of taxes, development, how important the information technology area is to the development of our country. And it really is, because I'm sure if we looked at statistics over the last 10 years, this is the largest growth area in our country. Well, probably around the world, for that matter. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on and talk about some of these other issues that I think. By the way, tell us a little bit about the American Consumer Institute. You all do research into various issues. You publish your findings. Tell me what you do.
Right. We're what's called a C3 nonprofit. So we really are an education research institute. We're not an advocacy group. So we don't do lobbying or anything of that nature. What we do is we just do research. We have a lot of professors and other researchers who look at public policy and interesting consumer issues involved, whether it be privacy, insurance, energy. The information technology is one area that we hold near and dear to our hearts, and a number of other issues. So there are a lot of somewhat more policy focused, but
they
also
all affect us as consumers ultimately.
They do, and so you know we might do something on how people can stay safe in a hurricane, things such as that. Of course, we missed the earthquake, didn't we?
Oh. Well, we all wish we'd missed the earthquake. To feel the earth rocking under your feet is not a pleasant experience. Anyway, well, let's talk about some of that. Let me just tell you about an experience I had recently, which I found a little bit disturbing. I was looking for some recliners for my family room. I wanted to replace some chairs. And so I went on Google and I did a search and I was looking at local stores to see what they had in terms of these recliners, etc. Well, then I discovered the next time, every time I've been going on the internet lately, every time I go into a website, there's a side ad that pops up with recliners. And they're often the ones that I looked at while I was searching, doing my little bit of searching. Do you know, I found that so offensive. I really think, what am I going to do? What can I do about this? I guess this is a trade-off, isn't it, that we as consumers, do we want a free search engine?
Yeah.
That's the price we pay.
There is. So it's the trade-off now. So we have to be careful that when we use what appears to be free, that we are compromising and giving away and allowing people to see what we're searching for. And why does that matter? Because what we search for lets somebody else know what we read, where we shop, what our interests are. Interests about travel and recent travel. You're looking for, you know, a recliner, and it pops up, or something pops up, and
right.
It offers to you in your city because it has memorized these. And some of these things are used for your convenience. They're cookies that are small applications on your computer that memorize. So you don't have to go through when you visit a website, and you can go through with much more convenience and ease and get to the information you need. On the other side, we have to wonder, what is this information being used for? How long is it being retained? And is it being sold or used for other purposes?
Can you give me answers to those questions, Steve?
Well, sometimes these things, there are rules and standards that have been established in terms of retention. And
this is true for all search engines. I don't mean to pick on Google. Because
that's right.
This, no matter who you use, there's going to be some way that they can make a profit if you're not paying for the service itself.
That's right. But what happens oftentimes is these applications providers are sometimes pushing the edge on their use of your information. So for example, I found the studio today by using my Android phone. There was a free application on there for navigation. And so I was able to walk, you know, the short mile from the metro over here. And as I came over, and wow, how terrific. This is free. It beats the Garmin. But you know what? My information and where I'm located is being stored somewhere in a server. And it's time dated. So they know exactly how I moved, and they is who's ever serviced the provider. In this case, it was Google, who, by the way, has 60-70% of the market share on search and probably a higher share on the revenue, on an ad revenue basis. So it's very important that we know this and that we're aware that we're making this trade-off. The trade-off is happening when we stop and we use Wi-Fi networks. You know, at Starbucks and other things, we need to understand that sometimes as we go to these networks, it's possible these are not encrypted, they're not protected, they're not password protected. It's possible that we're trading something off there and that somebody might find a way to do something malicious and gain access or information.
There's always talk about if you don't use encryption when you're in a Wi-Fi spot that there can be people sitting right across from you who can actually pick up your transmissions.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful about what you're doing. I am not a techie, so I have no idea what they're talking about. But I do know that I read that this is possible that people, and so you should be very careful and very judicious in whatever kind of information you're transmitting when you're at a Wi-Fi spot.
Absolutely. You know, when I'm at a hotel, I have used their wireless, and I feel fairly good about that. And many times they are protected. But you know, here on the streets, if you open up your phone, you're finding 5-6 other networks that
right.
are available, and you don't know if somebody has cloned something. And
right.
And so personally, what I don't use those myself. Now, if I had a you know, notepad or something that didn't have a lot of useful information, and I was just going around and wanted to browse, then I have very little to use. So there's a trade-off, and I've recognized the trade-off that I put myself maybe at some minor risk, but I'm not going to put any valuable information, you know, on my a computer or my laptop, my notepad, and
right,
and
so that you're not vulnerable. That's what you're protecting. Well, how do we protect ourselves? Is it a good idea after you've been doing some research, like I was doing on recliners, to just go in and remove all the cookies?
Yeah, well, you know,
I mean, that's a you
it's
know
a just, it's a personal
right,
choice,
right?
But
well, I mean, I don't care. You know, I'm hopeful. Washington's listening right now. No,
through,
I'm looking for a recliner.
I do. Surely, I do. I go through, and now and then I clear these things out, and I'll erase some of the cookies, and some of them I'll keep, and I'm very careful about some of the applications I go into. So sometimes I'm very careful about opening up some of these extra applications. They seem that they're nice. Gee, I have this weather application. I have this other. They're all collecting information on you.
Of course
you.
They are.
And so I just don't do that. Now, I don't. So
you sound like me, Steve.
Well, you know, it's listen. There's some things that seem so harmless.
Right.
But
are they?
But they're breaches on
when
our privacy.
But when you compile all of this information, you really get a profile of what people do, what they like, where they're going. You can do all kinds of things. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Steve Posiosk, who is the president of the American Consumer Institute, and we're talking about various consumer issues. Now, one of the things that when you and I first met, you were talking about the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and some actions that are being taken that you feel is going to severely impact on the Medicare coverage for equipment that people use at their homes, such as diabetes equipment, etc. Tell me a little bit about what this is. I don't really know.
Yeah, people aren't really aware of this sort of regulatory change that took place, and it was kind of snuck through on a Friday when Congress got an email at 5:15, and the media completely missed it. So, in the spirit of transparency, though, I'm going to tell you the lowdown here.
Okay.
So what happens is, there are some people who get durable medical supplies and products for their home use. Okay, these are prescribed by doctors. It could be oxygen crutches. It could be TEMS, which stimulates bone growth. It could be negative pressure wound therapy, which helps people close these awful large wounds in much shorter time than you know gauze and other traditional therapies. Well, what's going on is Congress 8 years ago had a great idea. You know, we don't know how to set these prices. We think we're paying too much for them. The Medicare is. Why don't we have a competitive auction to do it? Auctions are used everywhere. They're used on Spectrum for the FCC. They're a very efficient way to get the good market price, and getting the right market price gets the right supply out there. It's a good idea. Unfortunately, when CMS, that's the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare and Medicaid, when they went out on to implement this, they created some serious flaws in the auction rules. For example, one of the rules is that we don't have to have, you know, if somebody actually wins the bid, they don't have to supply it.
You mean they could go out and bid to supply a certain medical device, say diabetes equipment.
Right.
And then win the bid, but they don't actually have to supply it.
They don't have to
product.
Supply it.
So wait a minute. So what happens to the other people who were providing those services?
Well, then they're out of the market. And one study has estimated that half the medical suppliers are going to go out of business. That just came out
really?
Just a few weeks ago. Yeah. And we're talking about—
Why don't we know about this?
It's because it seems like it's such a narrow-defined thing. It's like a regulatory rule.
But you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who will be affected by the lack of availability of equipment is what you're really saying to me. Am I right? Am I understanding this?
So in the idea of coming up with a competitive auction, the failed rules will actually, instead of reducing Medicare costs, will increase them, because now if I have that severe injury, let's say I have some sort of ulcer on my leg that needs healing because of some condition like diabetes.
Right, sure.
Now what I'm going to find myself, instead of being able to have availability to the negative pressure wound therapy, is the only way I can get that is in the hospital. Well, hospital care is a lot more expensive than home care. So instead of reducing, which was the intent of Congress, instead of reducing the costs, we're going to have higher costs. We're going to have people who can't find diabetes test strips in some cases. And so what they're able to do is go to the pharmacy, which will get reimbursed at 2.6 times
the Medicare rate. Has this practice been implemented? Are we beginning to see the market issues that are going to evolve? Who in the world is going to look at it?
Yeah, this was first tested a while ago, and they have just announced a few weeks ago that they're going to roll this out, the auctions, and it'll take a year to get all this through the works. But they're going to roll this out to 91 metropolitan areas. So the expansion is going to include San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York City, San Antonio, Washington, D.C., and so on.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And so the whole idea of, that we're going to save billions of dollars by moving to an auction, instead what we're going to end up having is shortages, people not being able to get equipment, necessary equipment
to
the home.
Now, I'm sorry. I think I'm missing something here. In fact, have we seen this happening, or is this because it hasn't been implemented yet and this is what is believed is going to happen?
Well, we're just now – there were some trials, and in the trials there was an example where one woman had to go back to the hospital because she couldn't get something basic like oxygen.
Now, when you say a trial, this was an actual situation. This was real life.
What they did was they picked just a handful of products, and they picked maybe 6 or 8 towns. And they were trialing it, and the complaints went up and that sort of thing. But now we're going to go big time. So and if you look at sort of the experts who have looked at this issue, and let me give you an example. There were 167 economists and experts led by a professor at University of Maryland, Peter Crampton. He wrote a letter to CMS and said, wait, we're auction experts, and if you don't fix these rules, if you fix the rules, everything's fine. If you don't fix these rules, this is going to happen.
And it's not been changed.
Yeah, and there was a letter from 244 economists and auction experts that went to President Obama just a couple months ago that said, please do something. Intervene here. This is not going to work. Instead of reducing costs, we're going to end up pushing patients back into the hospital, increasing costs.
That's terrible. Well, not only that, but you get sick in the hospital.
That's it. That's so true.
I'm sorry, hospitals. I don't really mean that, but we do pick up infections in hospitals, which are not a desirable thing. Well, you've certainly given us a lot to think about, but I think the fact that we don't know about this is what's so startling. I have not read anything at all about these proposed auctions, this auction scheme, and the ramifications. So I guess it's up to us as consumers to learn a whole big lot more before it truly impacts our lives.
Right.
Especially if you're using these devices.
Yeah, it's really the case that this is something that has been underneath the radar. And you can find it in a few technical little magazines and medical magazines. But unfortunately, the mainstream news is not picking it up. And so I really commend you for giving me an opportunity to discuss this.
Well, you mentioned it to me, and I was fascinated by it because it was something I had absolutely not heard anything about.
And it's so easy to do. The FCC and other places, they do auctions. Auctions are easy to do. Just need to do them right.
Steve, what's your website if people are interested? Do you have information on this?
We do.
Okay.
We do.
Where do they go?
They can reach us at www.theamericanconsumer.org. So it's theamericanconsumer.org, O-R-G.
Okay. All right. I wish you success in casting light on this, because I think there are a lot of things that we're not aware of, and oftentimes we get too wrapped up in our own personal little things, and this, I think, is going to impact on a lot of people. So, yeah. All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being with us. Given us a lot to think about. I'm going to go out there and decide whether or not I want to wipe out all those cookies on my computer. Anyway, but that would stop the pop-up ads, right?
It would stop some of them anyway.
Anyway, okay. Well, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Steve Posiosk, president of the American Consumer Institute. I'm Shirley Rooker, and we're glad you were with us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.